Hey, guess who's back? It's us, the Bitter End Podcast.
With me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And wait, who is that coming over the hill? There's a third person joining the Bitter End today. Who could this be?
Oh my God!
Hi, my name is Mark and I've foolishly decided to do this. I'm from the Curator Podcast and I do music-y stuff, but my degree's in film TV, so I'm looking forward to tearing apart a full Scottish film.
Mark, I can tell from your Egyptian accent that you are particularly well-suited to talk about this franchise. Not just because you are an Egyptian Scotsman, but also because there's a little bit more to your degree than I think you just let on, right?
Yeah, I've also got a degree in Scottish literature, which will probably not help me in the slightest with this film.
Oh, but so did you not just grow up with the tale of Highlander just being told to you from a young age? Is that not the done thing in Scotland? I thought this was a historical text.
It's like Beowulf, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah. We don't talk about that. We don't.
Okay. that could be quite understandable from the incarnations that we've had of this franchise so far. But we've just watched the trailer for Highlander Endgame. We're here to talk about today.
It's a 2000 film? Came out in the year 2000?
Yeah, it came out in 2000. And this is the movie that's going to tie together the TV series and the movie series with our good friend, Christoph Lambchop.
Fuck me, this is the most noughties trailer I've ever seen. Like, this trailer looks more noughties than the trailer for Jason X did.
It sounds very noughties as well. It's like soundtracked by like a Rob Zombie remix.
It's got a Rob Zombie remix in it. Just the other day, I was stupidly rewatching The Matrix, and I was watching it with my wife, and she said, "You don't really hear Rob Zombie remixes in films anymore, do you?" And she was right.
Yep. This was probably the time when they thought this was no longer a good idea.
Mark, what did you think of the trailer?
My immediate reaction was, "Holy fuck, what have I got myself into?" And I was confused by the Rob Zombie remix as well, to be honest. I was like, what's going on? Why is this music playing? And do I really need to hear that? Because I'm not happy.
It's not traditionally Scottish, is
no,
it?
No, it's not traditionally Scottish, but I'll tell you what, it's fucking better than Queen.
Yeah, from the trailer, what I can piece together with the plot is it just seems like every Highlander film just like gets you back to the status quo of there being only one. Regardless of the fact, like in the last film, that there was never one. They just forgot about a load of them. And in this one, it looks as though they've forgotten about so many immortals.
There's an army of them.
Yeah, there's an army of immortals following a bad guy immortal. And then Connor McLeod is going to pal up with Highlander, the TV series.
Fuck,
guy.
So we need to talk about this element of it. Mark, have you seen any of the... Well, to start with, have you seen any of the Highlander films?
I've seen the first one because it's a historical Scottish text, obviously. So
of course.
I have seen it. And
what did you think?
Well, it's very much of its time. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I fucking love 80s action films. So like, I was like, yes, I'm all for this. And when I was quite young when I watched it, so it was like I didn't really care that Sean Connery wasn't Scottish, despite the fact he clearly is very Scottish.
And I would have thought that would be like a big sticking point for you, surely. You're a proud Scotsman.
Well, Sean Connery is not regarded as Scottish in Scotland.
Sick burn.
Yeah.
Guy lives in the Barbados, man. Come on, like, what do you want?
So what about this fucking TV series, though? Because this has been running... Well, Tom, when did the TV series...
I think, like, 92 or something like that.
So it's been running for, like, 6 or 8 years at the point that they suddenly do this film.
Yeah, I might have to do a little bit of research and just quickly see, like, when it finished, because it would be interesting if the series was still running point, or if this was just, like, a last-ditch attempt to squeeze everything they can out of the Highlander series, like the TV, the films.
I don't know anyone that's seen the TV show.
No, I don't know anyone.
Mark?
Either.
I don't think it was even shown in Britain, was it? I'm not even entirely sure it was.
I know it's on the Sci-Fi Channel currently. They're like showing it all the time, but I've never watched it.
To be honest, if it came out in 92, I would not have been paying attention to Highlander, the TV series.
You'd have been nine,
at
right?
10 or, years old. Yeah, I just would not have been looking for that. But like... This trailer looks like the most action-y. I know, like we've said, like as the trailers have progressed with the films, they keep on looking more and more action than the kind of like semi-high concept action of the first film. Maybe it's partly to do with the soundtrack. There's lots of explosions. Maybe it's the fact nothing makes any sense in the trailer. But it just, yeah. It actually, the soundtrack, it made me it reminded me of another Christopher Lambert film, Mortal Kombat. It just had that. Yeah. It had that same kind of Mortal Kombat, boom, 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 that kind of vibe going on. So I was kind of like, basically when the music kicked in, I nearly fell off my chair.
Yeah,
like blew me back across the room.
I mean, I'll be honest. I liked the trailer. I thought it was borderline, like almost going for a trying to convince us this would be a scary film. Almost.
I don't. It didn't really make any sense. Just some. They didn't really even introduce us to, like, who anybody is. They seem to be assuming that you just know who everyone is.
I don't even know. I watched that trailer. I don't even know who the hero from the TV show is out of all those people we just watched in the trailer.
I think he's another McLeod.
No, but, like, which one of those guys holding a sword was supposed to be the good guy?
The one with the funny eyebrows.
The him. Okay. Yeah. Oh, my God. One last word on the trailer before we move on. Did anybody else clock Christoph Lambchop's hairline?
Oh my God, yes.
That, oh, I missed that. He left his hairline behind him a good couple of miles, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's really starting to run out on him.
Does it look a little bit like Nick Cagey?
It looks a little bit drawn on with a biro, yeah.
Oh, okay. He goes to the same guy that John Travolta and Nicolas Cage go to. That dude who's got like a Hollywood Sharpie hairdresser. He draws that shit on.
Poor lamb chop.
Right, before we dive in, do you guys want to play the IMDb game?
It's my favourite game.
Right, so Highlander Endgame came out September 2000. What do you think it ranks on IMDb? Just to fill you in, the last film, Highlander 3, that was a 4.3.
Okay.
The highest we've had is Highlander 1, which is a 7.2.
Mark, I'm going to let you go first out of respect.
I think I'm going to go for a good solid 5, I think. A good solid 5.0, I think.
Okay. Todd, any
advance
on that?
Never to be outdone, I'm going to say 4.9.
4.9. Oh, you're like that. They're that guy playing the game. Well, you're both wrong, and you're both going to be disappointed, because it's a 4.6.
Oof.
That is a bit better than Highlander 3, though, and we both quite enjoyed Highlander 3.
I thought that was a fun romp.
I mean, I think we pretty much enjoyed it solidly because of Mario Van Peebles.
Mate.
And this doesn't have Big Peabody. So who knows?
All right, Mark, are you ready to slam headfirst into the brick wall that is Highlander Endgame?
I am absolutely ready. I'm really excited. I'm actually just looking forward to seeing Christopher Lambert's hairline. Hopefully it recedes further back as the film goes on. That'd be excellent.
Maybe that is the endgame.
Do you think that's how, obviously, because he's an immortal and it's kind of spans, like, you know, several centuries. Is that how they're going to mark the passage of time, that his hairline just goes further and further and further back?
All right, let's go track the course of this hairline over the centuries. See you in a little bit, guys. We're going to watch the film. Bye. Fucking hell.
Woo! That's, I don't know what I just watched, to be honest.
It was a wild ride.
It certainly was.
It was so many things. I mean, there were moments when I legitimately was thinking to myself, this is actually the best one since the original. There's like the sword fights, the monks with machine guns, the ninjas on motorbikes. Guys, I'm not making this up. Yeah. This is all in the film.
I enjoyed those bits. I don't know if I would say it's one of my favourites.
There were the other bits. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
It wasn't all monks with machine guns.
Yeah, because this is the one that's like ties in with the TV series, and this is a film that requires you to have done some homework, I feel, to really understand what it is that you're watching and what you should be caring about. I don't know.
Yeah. Mark, did you understand any of it at all?
Well, I was going in cold, having only listened to the past 4 podcasts, and I came out hot, man. I thought it was coherent. Actually, it wasn't nowhere near as bad as I thought it was going to be. Plus, it has fucking Edge in it from WWE. I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah, like, he's in
yes.
there.
Yeah, there's this credit that pops up near the start saying, like, starring Edge, well, guest starring Edge as blah, 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 blah. And Tom is a big wrestling fan. Mark sounds like he's a wrestling fan. I don't know anything about wrestling. I thought it was the Edge from U2, and I was quite disappointed when he wasn't in it.
Yeah, it's also got, had like another cameo from like Damon Dash, who's like Jay-Z's business partner. Odd. odd casting going on in this movie. Okay, I think then I'm the only one then who sat there and was like, what the fuck am I watching for like 96 minutes? I just was like, what? Like, so we just watched like Highlander 3 yo-yos all over the place, but this is, my God, I guess we should probably try and break down what actually happens in this movie.
Yeah, we need to. I think we kind of need to tag team this, like I understand is a thing that happens in the wrestling from time to time.
In the wrestling, yes.
In the wrestling. So between the three of us, I'm hoping that we can kind of talk our way through what the fuck happens in this crazy mummer of a film. So I'm just going to start with an easy bit, and then we'll kind of do a round robin. So the very first thing that happens in this film is about 45 minutes worth of credits.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like just, you know, like normally in like a motion picture, like a film, you go and watch in the cinema, you get your credits, but they try and build some tension by having something happen.
Yeah.
As all these names that you don't care about flash up on the screen. In this one, it's literally just a black screen and just like minutes and minutes of like people's names, and then you go, oh, Edge is in it.
But there's like little flashes of lightning, and it's the kind of music that would happen in a film in the year 2000, but that like would maybe be trying to tell you that it was going to be about like sexy vampire hackers or something. The music was like,
yeah, while nothing happens.
And it says Christoph Lambchop.
Yeah.
Also guest starring Adrian Poole, which is two first names, but is apparently the bloke from the TV show. Dunno. Looks a bit like a shit Steven Seagal.
Yeah, who plays Duncan MacLeod.
Duncan MacLeod. We were not able to determine the relationship between Duncan MacLeod and Connor MacLeod.
Just that they are both of the clan MacLeod.
Yes.
I think they may be like 100 years difference in age.
So on that note, having absolutely nailed my description of the very first thing that happens in that film,
yeah,
I think that's going to be a hard job to top. I'm going to hand over to our guest, Mark. Can you say what actually happens after the credits end?
Yeah, man, it's a sweet voiceover. Like, the sweetest of all voiceovers happens, and it's fantastic. And then I think, Connor and Duncan start talking. I think it's French. It could be Gaelic. It could just be their weird accents. Not entirely sure.
Yeah,
but I think it's their weird accents.
They're in New York, and they're doing New York-y things. And then Lambo, big Lambo, fucking Christopher Lambert, Lambo, gets himself blown the fuck up, which is, you know, awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's got, they're like, they're talking about, Connor's got a bad feeling or something, right?
Yeah. The thing that I find interesting about this scene is that, like, at no point in any of the other Highlander films has Duncan ever appeared or been referenced. And all of a sudden, you're just introduced to the two of them together, just having a pally chat.
Yeah.
And having never seen the TV series, I don't know how much they reference Connor MacLeod. So this, I was just kind of like, oh, okay. He's like, oh, I know you, Connor. It's kind of like, do you? I've never seen this before. Like,
well, Duncan speaks with quite a thick American accent, I thought.
It's,
yeah. And then Lambchop does
his goblin voice. Yeah.
Hey, Duncan, I tell you, I've got a terrible feeling.
And then Duncan's like, okay, why don't you tell me about it? Because I'm worried because you seem different. And Connor gets really annoyed and he goes, people change, Duncan. I can change.
Yeah, I mean, that's not really, doesn't really sound like a problem.
No.
The opening to the film is kind of confusing, but basically what happens is old Lambo, he wanders off to go to his old apartment.
Lovely. See Rachel,
who from the first film is like his adopted daughter that he rescued from the Nazis, and then she grows into an old woman and is the like his assistant at his antique shop, because remember that's a thing. And she is completely like not mentioned in any of the other films, and in the first film she's like, you're going away forever, aren't you? Even if you beat the Kurgan, you're never coming back. Apparently he did go back. And basically, she goes into his apartment and gets blown up and dies.
Yeah, exploded. Massive explosion.
Big close-up of Lambo going, no!
And his hairline right at the very back of his head going, no!
Nearly blown away. And so that's an odd callback to the first movie.
Yeah, Mark, you, with your extremely, well, compared to me and Tom, quite limited knowledge of the Highlander franchise, did you get the significance of Rachel, this older lady?
Yes and no. I didn't know that she was in it before, but obviously the films give you a really good idea of that, like, she's someone important in his life, so she must be important if she dies. So I was kind of like, oh, well, that sucks, but I don't fucking care. Like,
exactly. That's the whole thing is, like, you just say introducing someone, she must have like a minute of screen time, and so you're meant to feel bad for her and bad for Christopher Lambert that she is dead, despite the fact that she's just, it's such a you know, it's kind of like, oh, we were both kind of like, oh, she's back.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then she dies. Like, no, she didn't deserve that.
That was a nice little touch for the fans, though, I think, bringing her back.
Yeah, to just be killed.
But holy shit, guys, what happens next is really like some Planet Zeist levels of slightly odd shit going on. So Connor McLeod is extremely upset about this, about the death of his elderly adopted daughter. So he disappears to a place which is just called The Sanctuary, which seems to be run by like Benedictine monks or something, and they clap him in irons willingly, like he volunteers in this kind of Iron Maiden-y thing. And the idea is that there's some immortals volunteer to be in the sanctuary, locked away under lock and key, with the idea being that that way any bad immortals like the Kurgan, like Katana, like Cortan, like Khan, any of these other immortals that all have names beginning with K, can't get to them. So it's a way to, there's a line about these pathetic souls kept locked away as a barrier to the prize. They're the people in the sanctuary. And Connor McLeod volunteers to be one of those bros.
I think to just escape the pain of everyone he loves dying or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. He gives up, right? It's a sad moment.
Yeah.
Until.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, God. Until a load of motorcycle-driving ninjas show up and have a machine gun fight.
With all the monks.
This is probably one of the best bits in the movie. I think it's one of my most enjoyable moments. Mark, what did you reckon to this? This powerhouse scene.
Given the myriad of accents on display, as soon as I heard that vaguely Caribbean accent, I was like, is that real? Is that supposed to happen? Or is he just fucking something up? And then there was a really new metal guy, which I was like, holy shit, that guy's got some serious blonde hair and black beard. Yes. What's that all about?
And is that the guy who later gets his, like, he gets like a spiked club out and he goes, who ordered the club sandwich?
Yeah, yeah, man. Okay.
There was not enough of the like motorcycle new metal ninjas in this film for my liking.
Really,
I could have done with a lot more of that. Like the film really shines when because there's another fight scene later on in the film with these guys, and that's like another bit where, like, best fight scenes in the Highlander series.
As far as
I'm concerned, because they actually got some people in who can do fights.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like some proper martial arts. Like, there's a really cool bit where one of the motorcycle ninjas, who's like a kind of a possibly like a Chinese guy, he jumps off of his motorbike, which explodes behind him, and then he like pulls his helmet off of his head. It's like a medieval knight's helmet off his head, and then in midair, roundhouse kicks the helmet, and it just plain slaps one of the monks in the face, but like in a really inelegant way. It doesn't knock him out. He's just like, oh, ooh, oh, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like totally needlessly kicking that helmet. I was like, come on, man. That's some mental distraction tactics you're using there, Paul. Like,
works for him.
Yeah, I mean, because he had some pretty, like, tasty martial arts skills, so he doesn't really need to, like, really graciously boot a helmet into somebody's face. He had some better chops than that. But, okay, so while this is all going on, so in the present day, Connor McLeod has sealed himself away in the sanctuary, in his misery. But we get, a flashback to Scotland in 1555. We get to see Heather, the wife from the original film again.
Yeah.
And basically it's another filling in moment in Connor's past, where someone comes and says, like, that his old clan come back and say, oh, Connor, your mum, we're gonna burn her at the stake because they believe he's a devil.
Yeah.
And so he then goes back.
Now, I actually genuinely have a question for you, Mark, that might like, joking aside, call upon your degree here. So yeah, as Tom said, Connor goes to see his mum because she's being persecuted for having given birth to a devil, an immortal, and he finds her in like a hut, and she's like, she's weak, she's basically on her deathbed, she's, no one's been coming to see her, you know, she's been completely abandoned. And she says a line, something along the lines of, oh, I thought, Connor, is that you? I thought you were the water horse coming to take me on his back and drown him. So this is like some sort of metaphor for death, I guess. She refers to the water horse a few times. Mark, is the water horse like an ancient Scottish thing? I've never heard of the water horse.
No, not at all.
Okay. Like, it seemed unlikely, but at the same time, why would they put that in? Because that, maybe that's something from the TV show.
There's a lot of weird things that happen in that part from, a, I guess, a historical point of view. But if you're watching these films for historical accuracy, folks, then you are fucked. I'm you right now.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there might be a water horse.
This is the point in the film, though, where shit gets really bloody and gnarly.
It's a fucking 18. It's the first 18 certificate one, right?
Yeah. So basically, they what happens is Connor goes back and he gets jumped by his old clan and gets imprisoned. And then they burn his mum at the stake.
Led by a guy called Jacob Kell.
Yeah.
That is right. Another Highlander baddie whose name begins with a K.
Who is identifiable through most of the film by the fact he has three crucifixes on the back of his shoes. They spend so much of the film trying to obscure his face. Like, you don't see his face for like an hour. Like, it's always like shadows or just shots of his shoes. But basically, they're going to burn the mum and then kill Connor. But Connor hulks out when he sees his mum getting burned at the stake. And he, like, gets out like a... he's in a prison. He pulls out a prison bar from out of the wall and, like, stabs some dude in the neck with it. Then he chops some fucker's arm off and...
Oh, it's so brutal.
And it was quite shocking to see, like, because, like, for, like, a series of films where people are getting their heads chopped off, it's actually, their films are very low on gore and they don't really play up that gnarliness. And for this one, it's quite jarring watching it, like, as we've just been watching these in quite quick succession, just be like, oh, fuck me, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was into it. Like, I'm all about that shit, you know me. And the blood was a-flowing. And then, so Connor hulks out, he stabs a bunch of people, he stabs a priest and in the back and kills him, and then he goes to see his mum, who's like being crucified on this flaming crucifix, and she says, ah, Connor, my water horse. And then, like, the whole thing collapses and she burns to death. There's that bloody water horse again. And then Connor faces off with Kel, who looks like your mum's new boyfriend in a fake beard, basically. And he kills him, and then we fuck off back to the present day.
Yeah. At this point, I cannot remember what was going on. I probably didn't actually know at the time. Mark, have you got any... Could you fill us in, if you can?
There's a couple of things I wanted to say about that whole medieval stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
It was crazy when... Like, I totally noticed a thing with Kel and his face not being seen for a long time. But I've written down here, when he kills a priest, it's like, holy shit, Lambo gets double XP points for killing a priest. which I thought was quite fun. But then after that, it goes back to the sanctuary and you've got that really weird, completely needless voiceover where Christopher Lambert explains what just happened in the past. He explains it word for word again. I'm like, I just seen that. Like, why are you telling me that?
Yeah,
again?
Yeah. They do that all the time. Or they'll show footage of something that literally happened like 10 minutes ago. Re-show the footage.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, the important thing that happens in the sanctuary is obviously all these immortals are kept there to be kept safe from any bad immortals. But obviously, like, the Kung Fu motorbike immortals bust in there and kill everybody.
Yeah.
And kill all the immortals, and then the guys who run the sanctuary, it's not really explained why they are running the sanctuary and why they want to prevent Highlanders, immortals from getting the prize, but they're like,
who are the Watchers as well? It's like, who are these guys?
That must be something from the TV show.
Yeah.
It must be from the TV
show. So also, yeah, there's a group called the Watchers who are kind of like helping out the good immortals, like Duncan.
There's a line where Duncan says something like, because all this time Duncan's trying to track down Connor and find out what happened to him.
He's vanished.
He disappeared because he went to Sanctuary. And the Watchers kind of find Duncan and give him the clues that he needs to get back on Connor's trail. But when he talks to them, he's like, you're not supposed to be intervening. You're just watchers. And they're like, oh, well, the time has come for us to finally step up. And they get out their laptops and they've got like this program that's basically just like tracked every single kill that every immortal's ever done.
Oh yeah, so Connor in his time has killed apparently 262 other immortals.
It's quite a lot.
Duncan 174, but Kel has killed over 600, which that is just a lot of immortals. Like, for the series, you always get the impression that maybe there aren't that many immortals, but there's like at least like 1,000 of these.
So fuckers, many.
1,000 that have been killed by these three individuals. So like how they must have been like...
So many.
Yeah, tens of thousands of these guys.
So we need to address that. Kel, that guy who burned Connor's mum, is an immortal, we find out at this point.
Yes.
Just by coincidence.
Yeah. And his whole...
His whole beef is he is purposefully hunting down and killing people that Connor loves because, this is a bit of a stretch, that priest that Mark gave Lambert double experience points for killing was Kel's adopted dad.
Yeah, well, he even just...
So serious daddy issues. He's got serious daddy issues.
Yeah, yeah, like...
It's quite funny.
But it's really funny that, like, when he's explaining, like, why he did all of this, he would just... He says... he says it's either to Connor or to Duncan, like, oh, I killed your mother, and then I killed the woman that you raised as your own daughter. But he just kind of says like that they were not as equal to a man of God who raised me as his own. And it's kind of like, I don't know, dude, you've kind of lost me. Like you're it's really not balanced the way this guy is looking at things. And you just kind of think like, this film is like the only like Highlander film I think so far that really like looks at the idea of like being an immortal and how really unpleasant that can be. I think that the whole, like, there's a lot of things with like Duncan and Duncan's love interest Faith, and this whole thing of like living and seeing all your loved ones die and not being able to care for people. I get that, but that said, people are really good at holding grudges in this. And I mean, like, I've not been alive for that long. I can't hold a grudge that long. I just don't know if this is like the curse of the, you know, you just can't, like, you just cannot let anything go. I'm not saying you would let go, like, your father figure being killed, but, you know, like, people have a grieving process and like, people come to terms with things, but, like, all immortals are just like, no! No, 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 it's rubbish. Killed my sort of dad.
I love the video game logic of it. Like when they tell you how many people they've killed, it's like, well, all right, so they've got power levels now. That's cool.
Yeah,
we know they've got to go after the one with the highest power level.
Yeah.
And then when it moves on and they start talking about, there was a lot of interesting ideas in it, like you said about like exploring what immortality really means and how Kel doesn't really care about the game and all that. And it's kind of like, well, that's interesting stuff, but it's a shame the rest of the film is just nonsense.
Yeah.
Complete nonsense.
It was nonsense, but there were some kind of good bits in it. If you ignore all of the weird ways that it contradicts previous bits of films,
oh, we'll get
while
to that
also
in a bit.
Pulling those in. So just for example, there has not been a single Highlander film that hasn't ended with Connor being the only immortal left. Mm. Every single one of them has ended like that. Sometimes it ends with him being mortal at the end, sometimes it's a bit blurrier than that, but he's always the only one. And as you've pointed out already, Tom, in this film there's just suddenly shitloads of them.
Absolutely stacks of the buggers.
Were they all also in a cave somewhere? Like,
I don't know. This is the thing, like, I just feel like if you're gonna put out a film that is like trying to tie together a film series and a TV series, the TV series, I looked it up, like, finished in 98, and then there was a spin-off season series called like Highlander the Raven or something like that that ran for a year. So it's been a year since there has been like a Highlander TV show on. And then what, like six, it was it like 94 that the last film
yeah,
came out?
Yeah, it was
6 years since another cinematic release has come out. And it's staggering the how little kind of like just like easing in they do in trying to like get the audience like
up to speed with, like, here are the important, like, points that you need to know. These are who these characters are, because there's so many people who just, like, I just assume there's someone from the TV show, mm-hmm. and but you don't really fully understand what their motivation is. Are they a goodie? Are they a baddie? Like, you know, have these people got a complicated past? Fuck knows. It's just throwing people at you, and you just gotta doggy paddle, or you sink or swim with this movie.
But there's yeah, I mean, absolutely. But the people that they throw at you are really, like, they're undiluted, like, white hot distillations of movie tropes. Like, I mean, Kel, the guy that plays Kel.
Kel is amazing.
The way he talks, I mean, he doesn't quite have the same weird accent work as Lambo, but, like, he does have this crazy way of talking, where he never wants his lips or his teeth to touch each other at any point.
But he totally chooses scenery. That's what makes him so good. It's like, you want to see a bad guy that's, like, just giving it everything, man. Like, he's so evil, and he's playing it in his head, you know. You can see it when he's acting. It's like, he's thinking, I'm so evil, I know I'm really, really evil, so I'm just going to keep playing evil. And it's like, yes, do it.
Even now you're afraid. Afraid you'll lose. That's your true fear, isn't it? The thought of giving up your essence to me, making me even stronger by it. What's wrong? Don't you want to be inside me? Don't you want to be inside me? Inside me? Inside me?
He left, he gave it everything he had. He left it all out on the field. I've never seen a movie villain ham it up as much as the guy playing. Like, this is a performance that, like, Jeremy Irons would watch this film and be like, fuck me, he is, this guy's a little bit hammy. It's
like, I have a note in my notebook that it was Lambo versus Hambo.
Very, very nice, very nice.
But the other character that I think needs a little bit of talking about is the character of Faith, also yes. known as Kate, and her whole backstory with Duncan.
Yeah, so what, she's kind of his lover from the past, basically. Mm. Like, I think that he met her like 100 years into his immortality.
Yeah. So, Mark, did you want to kind of do a quick summary of the way that their romance plays out, maybe?
Well, it's interesting because she is apparently immortal, and she, well, not apparently, she is immortal.
The first female immortal in the franchise.
Yeah, which is interesting in and of itself, because she's not a very good actress, which is a real bummer, because she gets a lot of really good, potentially good scenes with Duncan, which is kind of a bit poor, I guess. Yeah. But it's also really interesting, though, that Duncan kills her. Like,
right, so
that's really, it's sad, and it's like very selfish of him as well, and it kind of totally explores that concept, like Tommy was saying, about what it means to be immortal, and I guess what it means to live with an immortal.
Yes,
as well.
Yeah. So this that's kind of like the kind of like the more emotional and like that's like the core of the film. There, it's just sad that it's executed by two basic mannequins of actors that we have with Duncan and Faith. I feel, can we just quickly go to Rules Corner now? I think we need to talk about this.
All right.
Okay, we're going to Rules Corner.
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 The whole big important thing that happens here that we learn with Faith and how the immortals work. They're getting married, and Connor, because apparently Connor has known Duncan all of his immortal life. Connor is like the Ramirez.
Yeah, he kind of schools him. He takes him to Italy, teaches him to sword fight.
Yeah, he fills him in on all the backstory, which is just kind of weird, because obviously none of this has been explained in the film series. Don't know about the TV series. If anyone can please fill us in on this, that would be awesome. But Connor seems to know that Faith is immortal. Or, more importantly, has the potential to be immortal. And apparently, in the films, like, in the world of Highlander now, immortality is something that is triggered by suffering a violent death.
Yeah, there's a line where he says, if she doesn't suffer a violent death, she will grow old, wither, and die.
Yeah, so, like, this whole thing, it's like,
It's like, yeah, again, with like the video game thing, it's like it's unlocking something. It's like leveling up or some shit that you suddenly like become, get a new power of becoming immortal. So it's just quite interesting that like, okay, so you're immortal if you die violently. But like what? Like, so if you got like a terminal illness, no, you would just die.
That's a really dark concept for me. Like, all of those people that might have been immortal had they just died younger, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so obviously, Kel is an immortal. If Connor had never stabbed him, none of this would have ever happened.
He would have gone on to meet Keenan and make that brilliant TV show together.
Yes, exactly. There's a whole lot of shoulda, woulda, coulda involved now, like with this thing. And I just, again, like that is on the rules of the series perspective, that is like a weird new one to be thrown in at quite a late stage in the game.
Like, I like it though.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Cool. It's cool and it makes sense. And this is one of the first films where they actually express the whole thing about the quickening, and that they actually come out and say, when you kill another immortal, you absorb all of their
strength.
Yeah, but the big problem with this movie is just like it pays very reference to the third film, which as far as we're aware is still considered to be canonical. Even if it was ignoring that and just going on the first film, Connor McLeod has won the prize already. But we've got this whole thing now with like all this other like crazy Highlander lore, and like hundreds of other immortals are still alive. There's this group of people trying to stop immortals getting the prize. It's really fucking confusing if you've been watching the films. It just does not follow.
This thing with the Watchers trying to stop people getting the prize. There's even the Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Because the recurrent strapline of these films has been there can be only one. There's actually a bit where one of the Watchers, to try and make sure that they're doing what they're doing, is they literally say there can only ever be two immortals. actually we need to make sure that there's always two,
yeah,
just to make sure that no one wins the prize.
It's almost like a hard it's almost like a really soft reboot,
yeah,
of the whole series.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's that's what makes it odd to watch. It's like, yeah, I understand you've had a TV series for the past six fucking years or whatever. Like, you've been doing that thing, but you've got this loose end and it's a big Lambo.
Yeah.
It's like, need to tie that shit up somehow, guys.
Yeah, it's just really weird that they even felt that the need to do that. Like, you know, they probably, because for the TV series, it stands to reason that you would have to have a lot of immortals and create all this other stuff going on. That's cool. And I like the idea of the Watchers and the Sanctuary and stuff like that, but it just clashes so hard with everything else that has been set up. The other rule that triggered this all, I nearly forgot. Duncan has married Faith, and Duncan is wrestling with this whole thing. Like, Connor is saying, like, how he lost his wife. He had to watch her grow old and die. And he's saying, do you want that for you and her? Because you could make her live forever, basically, if you violently murder her.
Yeah, yeah. Connor's so apparently so traumatized by having watched his beautiful wife, Heather, slowly become not quite as beautiful. He says to his mate, Duncan, mate, murder her now and she'll stay a hottie forever. Yeah. Basically what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And
you know what? Duncan bloody does it.
He does it.
I don't know if it's their wedding night or what, but basically he they boink away. She has a little snooze, and then he gets a honking big dagger and drives it into her chest.
Didn't discuss it with her beforehand. I've got this great idea.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm immortal. She literally wakes up covered in blood, like gasping and wheezing, and he's just there blubbing in the corner going, I'm immortal, but it's okay. We can be together forever now. Oh, she's gone. And she runs away, and they don't see each other for like several hundred years.
When she shows up on Kel's side with a massive chip on her shoulder.
Yeah.
I had an interesting thought. I was thinking, see, because when Duncan kills her for the first time and it's like intercut with like the sex scene in the present, I just thought to myself, can you imagine having that same sex scene for 300 years, like every single night? That'd be horrible. Like, that'd be horrendous.
It's, again, with the 18 certificate, it was a fairly well-lit sex scene.
Yeah, yeah, you know, not a lot was left to the imagination. Anyway, so
is that the end of Rules Corner?
I think that is the end of Rules Corner. So we should
rush to the end here.
We need to rush to the
basically,
end.
Basically, so Kel is fucking stuff up. Everyone's wandering around having conversations that don't really make any sense or necessarily don't make any sense to me. But basically, and Connor has disappeared. Connor has been wrestling with all these demons that I don't know. He's upset about stuff, about everyone dying. And then Kel is going to kill Faith, or he goes to kill Faith.
But he doesn't.
He doesn't.
It really looks
Kel
like
kills all of the ninjas, kills all of his motorbike ninjas, so that he sucks up all their powers and becomes super, super hammy. Duncan is off to go and have the final battle with Kel, and then Big Bad Lambo shows up. And he's like, we can't fight him together because that's a rule now, apparently. So what's going to happen is you're going to have to kill me and suck up all of my power. And he's also saying, like, basically, Kel's never going to stop until he kills Duncan to get back at Connor. So he's like, so the obvious thing is you kill me, suck up all my power. And sword fight ensues. And my God, people, Lambo dies.
Not a dry eye in the house. Mark, you're about to lie to me and tell me that you didn't burst into tears at the scene, aren't you?
I was actually. I thought it was probably some of the best acting I've ever seen from Lambo, if I'm completely honest. Like, and it was good. It was good. You know, it was actually, he did it really well, I thought. And I didn't quite cry. I've got to be honest. I did not quite cry.
Liar! A little lump in the throat, maybe.
There was definitely a lump in the throat. I can attest to that. That's definitely true.
Yeah. So yeah, like that is it, folks. Lambo is gone. There were bits in it where he's just like, just do it. Oh, it has to end this way. And I just kept on feeling that maybe this was just Christopher Lambert out of character, just saying these things, just being like, I just don't want to be in these films anymore. Just when will it end? When will it end? Oh, thank God.
The scriptwriter got that dialogue from a conversation he had with Christopher Lambert.
Yeah, basically. It's like, I'm sure you can nail this scene, Chris. And then we've got Duncan goes off to fight Kel in true Highlander fashion. It's in an abandoned factory.
Yeah, the main part of the fight happens in a big room that's just full of chains hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, they're both wearing the shiniest brown shirts you've ever seen because it's the year 2000 and everything's fucking shiny and iridescent.
I mean, it's a pretty good sword fight, guys, right?
It's okay. It's not as good.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah,
the ninja bits are better.
Yeah, it's no machine gun monk.
So then what happens? Well, obviously Kel gets killed.
I mean, no surprise. Yeah, Duncan.
He turns into CGI. Specifically, turns into CGI head.
Oh yeah, he turns
out of water.
Yeah, it's so good. So talk about the CGI head. Like, what the fuck does that even look like? It's so confusing.
It's like you spent the whole $25 million budget on that one CGI scene at the end where his head just became mega Kel.
Yeah.
He
just turns into a giant cloud face. But like that thing you're saying about them like using all the budget on that is quite apparent, because then you've got the bits of like Duncan wiggling around like a fish out of water getting zapped by really bad CGI lightning with like composited like backgrounds and everything. It's just like, oh my God, this is fucking ugly. You know, like there was much better special effects in like the first one. You know, all that hand-drawn animation looked a lot better than this like horrible cut and paste.
I appreciated it. I think you guys are being mean.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, dude.
But that's and then the that's film. It. Yeah, Kel is dead. Faith comes back. She's not dead after all. She forgives Duncan for like stabbing her in the stomach on their wedding night.
Yeah.
And then they have a big smoochy, soggy kiss.
Yeah. So, I mean, for my money, it's not the best in the series.
I agree.
To be fair, actually, I'd say it's my least favourite.
Whoa, more than like...
Oh, actually, no. The Adventure Begins.
The cartoon one was not good.
Yeah, Mark, has this made you like feel like you would want to go and like watch any like you know any of the other instalments in the Big Lambo saga?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't think it was that bad. I know what you're saying about a lot of ancillary characters just suddenly being thrust into the limelight. Like, what the fuck is this guy like? When the guy shoots the other guy in Christmas. Utterly bizarre.
They never mentioned that it was Christmas at any other point in the film.
It's this big, like, suddenly Scorsese-style gangster shooting scene, and then the guy goes, "Merry Christmas, asshole," or something like that.
Maybe we're misreading it. Maybe the whole thing is, like, it wasn't actually Christmas, but, like, that's just, like, a thing, that character in the TV show, that's just his catchphrase that he always just says, "Merry Christmas, motherfucker."
Doesn't have a name. Maybe his name's Mr. Christmas. Yeah. Like, maybe that's his
Who knows? I mean, I suppose I could go and watch the TV series to try and find out, but I'm not fucking gonna.
That's for another podcast. I think, guys, that is a totally different
Let some
podcast.
Other two guys do that.
But I liked it. I did actually like it. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was going to be awful, but it was. I did not hate it. I didn't find it. It was paced really well, apart from the shitty sex scene. It was paced really well, I thought. So
I
would watch more of it. Like, I would watch the rest. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't hate it. I just found it thoroughly baffling.
I got to say, Tom, you seemed a little more confused than me.
Yeah.
There were, like, a lot of plot points where I kind of had to, like, explain to you, oh, he's Christopher Lambert. He's like a man. He kind of walks around and talks.
Yeah. It's like, no, he's a Scotsman. What? But why is he talking like that? I think that my issue with it was, like, because the film does just seem like it's a parade of plot points just driving towards a final resolution, but without really, like, having things that you watch cinema for, like characters that you can invest in and understand. Yeah. It's just kind of like someone just shows up and be like, I'm here to move us to this point.
There were two big points, weren't there? There was the death of Faith, the wedding night stabbing, which was straight up just a good scene that I really enjoyed. It was a weird scenario, but that was a good scene that I really liked.
Interesting addition to the mythos of the franchise.
And then the other thing was just the death of Lamb Chop.
Yeah.
That was it. But the whole film was just about, like, they were basically like, we need to make a film that gets rid of Lamb Chop. That's why we're making this film. That's why it's Endgame. Mm. Get rid of Lamb Chop. Yeah. Maybe we'll make a bunch more films about Duncan after this. Doesn't matter. We just have to get to this point where Lamb Chop is gone for good.
Yeah. It was just also just unusual, like, the timing of the whole thing, because at this point, they're, like, setting it up that the characters from the TV show are going to carry on the torch. But by this point, the TV show has finished.
Yeah, that was odd. That was really, really bizarre, because there's a lot of seeds in it of doing that, of carrying it on. And it's like, maybe this was actually trying to get another TV series made. Maybe that's the whole purpose of it in the first place.
Well, we will later watch The Source, which is the first of made-for-TV movies, Highlander movies, for the Sci-Fi Channel. Apparently, they were going to make three of them, and they only did one.
Oof.
So...
So it's a real good... Like, one was enough.
Yeah.
They were like, nailed it on the first one. Don't need any more.
Yeah, crushed it.
Does Lambo really carry it that much?
Yeah.
That's what you take away from it. Is it really that the man...
I don't know.
Is that what it's all
about?
Yeah,
because I'm a bit concerned about watching another, like, you know, like 90 minutes without any Lambo and just Duncan.
Well, this brings us nicely to a section where we get to make our predictions about the next film we're about to watch. And Mark, I think you can play along with this because you know as much about it as we do. So the next film is Highlander: The Search for Vengeance. This is the Japanese-made anime.
Yeah.
Feature length. Now, all I've done is I've seen some pictures, just some literal still pictures. And from what I can tell, I think it's going to be a little bit adult. I think I saw, like, cartoon boobs and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, you see plenty of boobs in these films anyway.
Yeah, I'm just saying it might be a little bit more adult than The Adventure Begins.
I reckon it will.
What are you expecting, though? Like... A Japanese take on this, I think, is going to be quite interesting.
I think it's made, though, in co with maybe one of the producers from the films and the TV show, or, like, maybe it's, like, one of the writers has a hand in it. So it is, like, it's not just, like, someone's bought the license in Japan and, like, knocked out their own version. I think that there might be some kind of a tie to it. Where it is set in time, I do not know. Maybe it'll be more, like, of a medieval thing. Because they're not really tied to any specific time or place because it's animated.
Mm.
But I don't know. I'm looking forward to this a lot more than when we watch The Adventure Begins.
Mm.
I think it'll be an interesting take on it.
So I'm curious, Mark, having seen the first film and the fourth film, are you going to be dipping into any of the others?
Definitely. I'll probably watch the rest of it, I think. I don't think I'll enjoy it as much.
Yeah,
but,
don't watch The Adventure Begins. I don't think you just want to watch the Lambo ones, basically.
Just stick with the Lambo.
Keep it pure.
Mate, if you thought this one was fucking crazy, then two.
The Quickening.
The Quickening
is going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
So listen, before we go to bed, guys, before we all tuck up in this big double bed together and pull the duvet up and turn the light out, I just think that it's time to take a little visit to story time with Toddly T. Is that all right, guys?
Yeah, I could do with a wind down.
Little wind down. So, Mark...
This is why I came on the podcast. This is what I wanted to hear.
Well, Mark, you'll be extra pleased to know that this bit of story time is specifically for you, actually. This is one of the first pages that I marked. It's way early in the book. I have been going through these in order, but I'm backtracking just for you. So this is the section of the podcast where I read from Highlander, the novelization by Mr. Gary Kilworth. Now, as we currently stand, Mr. Kilworth has still not responded to any of my messages asking for an interview, but I will continue to send him a message once a day, every day, until he does.
As we say here in Scotland, fucking boo. Fucking boo.
Is that a Scottish saying?
Yeah, we say it all the time, fucking boo.
Okay, I'm going to start doing that. So this is from page 37. Now, Mr. Mark Fraser, this is a scene from the medieval Scotland portion where Connor is about to go to war against the rival clan, the Frasers.
Oh, dear.
So this is a direct reference to your ancestors, Mark. I'm assuming the Frasers have been in Scotland for a long time.
Oh, yes, we have conquered this fair land and then let it go.
Okay, well, in honour of your ancestors, Mark Fraser, this is story time with Toddly T.
The hot afternoon had made the mounts tire early, and they were dragging their legs a little now. A piper struck up a battle tune somewhere in the ragged ranks of the MacLeods, and the music lifted his heart a little. The lone drummer followed suit, and soon the rhythmic, repetitive sounds filled him with the pride and hatred necessary for him to go into the forthcoming battle. The banner carriers unfurled the Gonfalon, depicting a black bull's head. Things were stirring in the hearts of the clansmen. Fear, yes, but old wrongs were recalled to mind of pillaged crops and raped women. The Frasers! Revenge! A thirst for the blood of an ancient enemy. In the order of things, a Fraser was almost a lower being than an Englishman. Almost.
Thus concludes story time with Toddly T.
Wonderful. I'm going to clap.
Well done, Mr. Gary Kilworth. You have described Mark's ancestors with great precision.
Have you got his email address? I'm going to send him abuse.
Anyway. So on that jovial note, I kind of think this is the end of the episode.
I think it is. We've covered what we're going to do next time. We're going anime.
Yeah. In the meantime, thanks as always for listening, everybody. If you've got a question or something to say, please do find us on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those we're on at Bitter End Pod. And please do leave us an iTunes review if you get the chance. Mark, would you like to give a quick plug for your totally awesome music podcast?
Yes, the Curator Podcast is where I speak to inspiring musicians about their creative impulses and their creative life in order to better understand my own, and so far it has proven fruitless, but I'm enjoying it, so that's all that matters.
It is an absolutely excellent podcast. Where can people find it?
You can find it on iTunes, The Curator Podcast, thecuratorpodcast.com. I'm on Twitter at The Curator Pod, Facebook the same. Yeah, so come and say hello to me. Have a wee listen.
Even though he is lower than an Englishman, almost.
Oh dear! I'll never live it down. I'll never live it down.
That is a harsh one. I think we can all feel thoroughly offended by the words of Mr. Gary Kilworth.
Okay, well, Mark, thanks a lot for being on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Thank you for having me. It's been good fun. I've enjoyed it.
And thanks for listening, guys. Till next time, fucking boo!